Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Many of you are probably familiar with Elijah Abel. He's the best-known early Black Mormon priesthood holder in the early days of the Church. In this episode, which I've titled The Black Mormon Scandals, I'd like to talk about two lesser-known, but I would argue more important, Black priesthood holders in the early days of the Church. We'll start our conversation with Warner McCary. He's a former slave who caused a lot of trouble in the early days of the Church. Let's listen in on our conversation. In some research that I've done on Warner McCary, so as I understand it, Warner was, he claimed to be part Indian, but most people, I believe, thought he was Black. He actually married the stake president's daughter.
Lucy Stanton. Yeah.
And I believe it was Orson.
I think it's Orson Hyde.
Yeah, Orson Hyde married them as an apostle. So there didn't, you know, I guess, Warner McCary is interesting because he claimed to be, I believe it was Choctaw Indian, and he was known as the Lamanite prophet. And so he, on the one hand, has this blessed Israelite heritage, or at least it was believed that wasn't true. But on the other hand, a lot of people thought he was Black. So, you know, you've talked a little bit about amalgamation and how interracial marriage wasn't a problem. You know, Warner was a really interesting person. So are you very familiar with that story?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. You want me to kind of talk about it? Well, I'm not completely convinced that Warner is ordained to the priesthood, and I know some people have suggested that he is. The only evidence is coming from well outside of anyone who would have been close to what happens. The suggestion is, I think, that it is Orson Hyde who performs the marriage. Never been able to verify that marriage taking place at the hands of Orson Hyde being sealed or being ordained to the priesthood. So for me, there's still a bit of a question mark there, but regardless, they are present themselves as a married couple. They're in winter quarters, and McCary complains to Brigham Young that he's not being treated well because of his racial identity. And so this prompts the meeting between McCary and Lucy Stanton, Brigham Young, and every present member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles. There are a couple of members who aren't there, but everyone who is at winter quarters and a member of the Quorum of the Twelve are in that meeting. So this is really an unprecedented kind of event. And the minutes of the meeting really kind of describe then McCary in very rambling statements, trying to ferret out his racial identity. He presents himself as a Native American, but like you said, the accusation amongst Mormons at Winter Quarters is that he's Black, and in fact, as best as historians can tell, he's Black. He's a former slave, has this long interview. He also says that he's Adam, the Ancient of Days, and he's missing a rib. And so Willard Richards, in this meeting, kind of examines his body, looks for the missing rib, and reports that there's no rib missing. Everything seems to be in place. And Brigham Young comes out as McCary is complaining, and he's saying, I'm not being treated well. It's because of my racial identity. Some people call me, the N-word, and what is it? What does it matter if I'm Native American or African American or Adam, the Ancient of Days? I should be treated well. And Brigham Young really tries to calm him and simply says, we don't care about the color. And he actually refers to Q. Walker Lewis, who is another Black priesthood holder in Lowell, Massachusetts. And he says, he cites him as evidence that Mormons don't care about the color. We have a fine elder, an African, in Lowell, Massachusetts, he says to McCary in that interview, citing him as evidence that Mormons don't discriminate in terms of priesthood ordination. And so Brigham Young is on record in March of 1847 as favorably aware of a Black priesthood holder. That's why I think that meeting is so important. But Brigham Young will leave winter quarters. They seem to resolve. McCary leaves the meeting feeling fine about things. But Brigham Young then leads group into the Great Basin. McCary stays behind in winter quarters and actually starts a schismatic group of his own. He's attracting followers and performing sealings to white women in a sexualized ritual that comes to the attention of Parley Pratt, who's at winter quarters, and Pratt will speak out against McCary, and eventually McCary and his followers will be excommunicated. McCary and Lucy Stanton will leave Mormonism and actually reinvent themselves as Native American performers, and they perform in all kinds of population centers on the East. He describes himself as a Native American prophet and her as his Native American wife, even though she's white.
A Delaware princess.
A Delaware princess, right? To large audiences, they can never fully escape their racial background. They eventually split. Lucy Stanton will eventually make her way back to Utah Territory, Springville, and reunite with her family, but after like 20 years. So it's a pretty amazing story. But Brigham Young will return from the Great Basin in 1847, and he is met with news of McCary's exploits and race mixing, and then also news that Enoch Lewis in the Low Massachusetts branch, who is Q. Walker Lewis's son, Enoch Lewis is black, married Mary Webster, a white member of the Low Massachusetts branch, and William Appleby, who had been appointed to survey the condition of the branches on the East Coast, arrives in winter quarters and gives his report to Brigham Young. Did you know that we have an interracial couple in our branch in Low Massachusetts? And Appleby is clearly against race mixing. In his personal diary, he speaks out strongly against it. He records meeting them and said, I can't believe that they are members of my church and that we allow this in Mormonism. And so he meets with Brigham Young December 3rd, 1847, and gives his report. There are only 13 lines of that meeting that are recorded, and they all center on race mixing, and Brigham Young speaks out strongly against race mixing, actually advocates capital punishment as the penalty. But he doesn't ever mention priesthood in the minutes, at least in the surviving minutes. Like I said, the meeting goes on like 4 hours, and we got 13 lines. So it's really hard to know the full extent of the conversation. But what gets recorded seems to center on Brigham Young. Okay, I've had enough. We've got McCary, who was performing, you know, sexualized sealing rituals to white women, and then he's met with news of this interracial marriage in Low Massachusetts, and he speaks out strongly against it. And I think, you know, that pushes him in a different direction.
Okay, I guess there's one other important event that I just want to highlight a little bit. Are you familiar with Joseph Ball and what happened in Massachusetts as well?
Yeah, so I'm also kind of suspicious of Joseph Ball's racial identity. So I've not seen any documents that describe him as black. And so I'd like to do some more research on him to try to ferret that out. Not quite sure what to make of Joseph Ball yet.
Oh,
so
that's very interesting.
Yeah, I know that other people have written about Joseph Ball as you know, first black high priest and leader in Massachusetts, and I'm just kind of waiting to get a chance to try to research that a little bit more and figure out what's going on, because it's just odd to me that those who are visiting aren't describing him as black.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it's my understanding that he was the first black high priest and served as branch president there, and I believe it was in Q. Walker Lewis's same branch. Is that right?
It was Boston, and so I'm not sure if it's the same branch or not. It may have been. I'd have to check that out to make sure.
Yeah, that's my understanding, but You know, there was some issues with the branch there with William Smith. Are you familiar with that story?
Well, just maybe the basics, but William Smith, who is an apostle, is going to Lowell, Massachusetts, and engaging in extramarital sexual exploits. You know, so there's some question about his behavior there and how that kind of impacts his increasingly erratic behavior and his eventual split from Mormonism.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go back. So, you know, we've got Warner McCary doing some sexualized sealing women rituals with white women. We've got Enoch Lewis with his mixed race child. I've kind of wondered. It seems like this is about the time where Brigham, who in 1846 was impressed with Walker Lewis back in Boston, and then in 1852, as he's explaining about slavery, which I want to talk a little bit about slavery being legalized in Utah, that's where he talks about one drop, as I recall. Are you familiar? Am I telling it right?
Well, Wilford, if you go with Wilford Woodruff's very truncated attempt at capturing Brigham Young's speech in his journal, then Woodruff will insert the language of one drop into Brigham Young's speech. But if you go with George Watt, who captures a speech in Pittman shorthand, George Watt does not have Brigham Young using the one drop language.
Oh, that's an important distinction.
Yeah.
I know you've warned me about that before.
Yeah.
But I still have a problem with that.
Yeah. So for the book, I was able to get back to the Pittman shorthand version of Brigham Young's speeches for the legislative session. And I believe that we shouldn't rely upon Woodruff's very shortened, truncated version. Imagine kind of capturing our conversation, trying to capture it in longhand, versus a court stenographer, trying to capture it. And Pittman shorthand isn't as precise as a court stenographer, but nonetheless more precise than trying to capture it in longhand. And Woodruff captures around 800 words, and Watt captures something like 2,400 words, and so three times as many. And I think much more precise in capturing what Brigham Young is saying, and Watt does not include the language of one drop. And so in the documentary history that we're producing, going to try to make the case that scholars should rely upon the Watt version over the Woodruff version.
Thank you for listening to our conversation. I hope you'll come back for part 5 of our conversation with Dr. Paul Reeve. Dr. Reeve made an amazing discovery just a few years ago of some speeches that were unknown prior to just a few years ago. A few of them involved the Apostle Orson Pratt, who, in 1852, a decade before the Civil War, argued for black voting rights in Utah.
Pratt votes against both of those bills, and the minutes tell us that he does so because they don't allow black men to vote.
I think you'll enjoy our next episode. I've tentatively titled it Becoming a Fanboy of Orson Pratt. For more information on topics like this, please check out our website, gospeltangents.com, where you can purchase a transcript for just $3. Or you can also get one on amazon.com. Also, please subscribe on iTunes so that more readers can find out about us. Finally, we appreciate your support.